Okay, our next presenter. This is another individual. We are speaking with individuals that have been involved in the CEP movement for many, many years. And Paul Helfrich, one of those individuals. And he has been involved with the CEP movement on many different levels. And he has not only presented in many, many conferences, and is a scholar of material. He's an individual that has also been involved in the forums and message boards for years and years and years, just having a million and one conversations with a million and one people. And these are the unsung heroes of the internet world, and the work that they do is very interesting because there's so many people out there on the message boards, and they're all trying to parse the material and trying to understand it. And I'm one of those people that, you know, I never say anything, but what do they call it? Lurker. I'm a lurker. I like lurk around and, you know, because I'm like afraid to get into some of these conversations. I gotta tell you, it's goddamn scary. So you have to have some fortitude, I gotta tell you, to take this. And Paul has had a lot of fortitude over the years, I can tell you. And the truth of the matter is that that I, for one, really appreciate having a voice like Paul's handling some of this stuff. And there are so many times when people really need to understand the CEP material and how to really use it in very, very practical terms. And the debates, and this is what Seth said, I mean, in class, it was all about, Seth encouraged us to debate these issues, tear them apart, and that's what's done on these message boards a lot. And Paul has just had a tremendous voice for sanity, I'd just like to say, on the message boards. So I would greatly appreciate it, and he's a great presenter, so let's have a big round of applause for Paul.
Thank you, Rick. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Great. Well, I want to start by thanking Rick Stack and Anne Marie O'Farrell and New Awareness Network for inviting me to talk today. Shall we unleash the beast? Shall we try and contact the gods? What I'd like to do when I present is give you a brief roadmap of what we're going to do for the next hour, or however long we have on our schedule. I'm going to talk a little bit about myself and my interests. And I want to present some backstory on a new book that is coming out soon called Seth, the Ultimate Guide. We're going to take a look at the book. Then we're going to look at what's new with New Worldview. How many of you are familiar with the website New Worldview? Just a show of hands. About half of you. Great. Also, my talks are interspersed with musical interludes to kind of give the rational intellectual, the high intellect, a break, and let the emotional feeling self kind of digest some of the things. And those are all original compositions. They're available on various outlets, including my new website, paulhelfrich.com. There's one song by Enya in the presentation today that I did not write. And then we'll end with questions. I will take questions at the end. So my background, if I have to use one word to describe myself, I use the word educator. I've been a teacher in some form or another for the last 30-some years. I've been a camp counselor. I've been a music teacher academically. I've been a science museum exhibit developer and programs developer. I've been involved with the CEP community, a metaphysical teacher of sorts, for a while as well. But I take a multidisciplinary path through this, and so, like so many of you, we have such a diverse spectrum of interests. But I use three general terms to describe them: scientific approach, an artistic approach, and a spiritual approach. And integrating them is crucial, I feel, in moving ahead in the 21st century. Obviously, I would not be standing here in front of you today if I did not have a deep love of the CEP material. I have been known to kiss my Seth books. How many of you have kissed a Seth book? Come on, I know you're out there. It's a passionate moment where you have such deep appreciation of this thing. It is so sacred. You are so thankful to have a voice of sanity this plant will live. And there are now 30 Seth books of Seth material. Rick has produced the ESP class sessions. There's 4 of those available now. We're up to 30. Most of us know the 10 or 11 by Amber Allen that are the most famous ones, but there's now a lot with the personal sessions, the leader material, and ESP class. As Ricky mentioned, I spent 11 years cutting my teeth in the cyber denizen world, moderating the SethNet email list, and the debates rage. And John Stewart's having a march to restore sanity. Well, as Ricky said, my role in there was an attempt to restore sanity when things kind of went too far, and sometimes they did, but that's passion, that's emotion, that's dealing with the real stuff that we have to deal with. I cut my teeth on that. I learned a lot, and this book that I'm going to talk about today is a direct result of that experience. And I also should mention before I move on that I volunteered for Linda and Stan's Seth Network International in 1998 and started as the SethNet moderator at that time. When Stan passed away in 1999, Linda retired temporarily. Thank God she's back. We carried on with SethNet. It moved into the New World View domain for a number of years until just July of 2009 when we finally closed it. It had played itself out, and I had played myself out too as the moderator. It was time to hand it off to someone else. And of course, Linda and Michael had just arisen in July before that time. Actually, or June. I guess you guys launched in June, so I was like, oh God, thank you. Here's the torch back. So please, smi.org is a great place with a lot of wonderful information. Of course, I manage the New World View website. In my own personal life, I just turned 55. My birthday is 5555, so I'm 5510. I was 55. All this five fives, you know, 2 legs, 2 arms, and a 5-pointed human body, and so on. The number 5 is a sacred number in sacred geometry. As I'm getting older, what is my legacy? What do I have to leave behind me? And it's fine if you don't want to leave anything behind you, because I've had this debate. What the hell do I need to leave anything behind me for? I don't need a legacy. Fine. I, however, have a passionate desire to try and pass something on to the next generation with this material as we get older. I feel it's almost a moral imperative that I take action and do something about that. So the third phase of my life, the last 13 years or so, has really been concentrating on spirituality, metaphysics, and my own personal spiritual path. And after 34 years of the Seth material, it is a spiritual path. There are many spiritual paths in the world. As Seth said, all roads lead to the inner self, which is another way of saying all roads lead to the one, eventually inevitably. So I want to take a brief picture, kind of come up to the Roman general's 30,000-foot perspective on this thing, and take a look at American spirituality, because I've researched this. And Jane, in The God of Jane, has a beautiful ending of the American vision that essentially says she foresees this material going forward in a democracy of spirit. And it's something particular to the American psyche, at the very core, and something that we do as Americans the very best. And that's our messy, crazy democratic system. But what that means is that no single entity, organization, creed, color, or agenda can claim sole proprietary rights to the word or the truth. And this was Jane's American vision. I think it's a very important one to keep in mind as we go forward. So this was part of her legacy in one of her last books that she wrote before spending the final years of her life in the hospital. Catherine Albanese is a scholar at the University of California, Santa Barbara. She had a book that she released in 2008, A Republic of Mind and Spirit, and she painted a broad brush of American spirituality, which is very interesting. In her view, there are 3 main genres that we fall into. The first one is evangelical, cultivates strong emotional feelings that are eventually transformative. So as an example of that, can I get an amen?
Amen.
This is the interactive part of the thing, people. Okay. Can I get a hallelujah?
Hallelujah.
Can I get a Satan, be gone?
Satan, be gone.
Oh, come on, you guys. Right. We're not used to doing that, are we? We're not comfortable with those kinds of emotional, heart-centered, and ripping on. Some of us watch the religion channels and study these preachers and the techniques that they use. There are some Southern Baptist ministers that are wonderful, and I think they have wonderful ministries that are, for the most part, healthy and authentic. But the Reverend T.J. Jakes, he's up there when he's in the Spirit, and he's in front of that congregation, and he's talking about the Word, and it's healthy parts that congregation feel. And he's got a gospel blues organ player who's right riding every move of his. And the music, you know, you just, if you're not having a transcendent experience, who knows what. So this evangelical movement is very strong in its healthy form, and it's heart-centered. The second main type, and it's the dominant one, is liturgical. It's the mainstream, denominational, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, and even now Buddhist, Hindu, and other sects that are out there. The third one, she calls metaphysical. The intellect in this one is privileged, but moves into intuition, clairvoyance, higher guidance, magical, and mind-centered. And it's magical in the sense of Seth's magical approach, not in the sense of pre-rational, childish magic where we sit there and close our eyes and say, you don't exist at all. Now we can debate this, of course, and we can. But we get into a solipsistic, you know, all that is my ego. That's all that exists. The ego is all that is. And that's a big category error. It's a big mistake. But in the mature, adult, transrational, magical approach, we open to the transcendent. We understand that. So this metaphysical, intellectual category is sort of where I would put this movement of the Seth community in terms of American spirituality. And just a brief history of what I call spiritual science as an organizing principle. The New Thought movement goes back to Phineas Quimby in the 19th century, the Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy, divine science, the unity movement. I have to say something about Emily Caddy's, or Caddy, I'm not quite sure how we pronounce it. Her writings on esoteric Christianity I find tremendously beautiful. It has revealed the mystical parts that are still in biblical scripture. And if you are interested in that in your practice at all, I recommend it. She has three books that fit. You can buy it on Amazon in this morning. It's tremendously beautiful. And again, it's the esoteric course, contemplative prayer techniques and whatnot, to talk to your inner self. It's another way of doing that if you have some Christian imagery in your background that you wish to recapture somehow. Anthroposophy, Rudolf Steiner. He was not American, but the anthroposophical movement is here in America. The Waldorf schools. How many people are familiar with Waldorf education? Have heard of that? Oh, that's wonderful. I am studying to become a Waldorf teacher, by the way. This is sort of my end game as I see myself going forward teaching the children of the future and pass this on. Then we have the mental religious science of Ernest Holmes, who only passed away 50 years ago. And then what I would put up is dream art science and Jane's aspect psychology. It should say aspect psychology. It just didn't have enough room to keep that on one line. But this, I feel, is Seth's major contribution to a spiritual science and American spiritual science. And then I want to add my other teacher, Ken Wilber, who's only 61, and his Integral Institute, and what I loosely label him as an integral psychologist. We could call it integral spirituality if we wanted to. But these are some of the lineage that we, as a group, or individuals practicing the Seth material, occur within.
The scientific validity of any spiritual teaching lies not in the authority or history of an organization, but in the ability of an individual to verify or falsify the teaching within an ever-evolving community appears adequate to the teaching's praxis.
That's a lot of information. But let's just say we're planting a seed there. Some of the key elements in there, as we're looking at spiritual science and spiritual practice, what is science? Scientific method can be boiled down to three items. Some type of experiment that we set up, whether it's measuring photons, measuring growth rates, measuring rainfall in the jungle, or attempting to contact the inner self. There are experiments that allow us to find a way to measure that. The second part is to do it, actually do the experiment. The third part is to take the results of your experience, your direct eye, first-person experience, and then compare them, present them to a group of peers. But the key here is adequate to the experiments, the limitations and challenges of the experiment itself. You can't just take a 7-year-old and tell him to go up in the space shuttle and measure growth rates or hormone rates in mammals in space. So you have to become adequate, and that's the catch-22 from a scientific perspective. There is a science here, and it's an emerging science. I think it's very important moving forward. This chapter of my life is to write a book about the Seth material. And last year I talked about following the beat of a different drummer. Sumafi is one of Seth's 9 families of consciousness. It is the educators or the teachers in the group of 9 where most fall. But of course, the way the 9 work, all 9 can be teachers of some kind and have a teaching function. So it's not just limited that way. 2 years ago, when I spoke at the Denver Seth Conference, Bob Friedman, who was the publisher of the book Conversations with God, approached me and asked me to write an introductory book on the Seth material. I thought it was time that we have something like that, and I thought he was joking, actually. So the conference came and went. I didn't follow up immediately with him. He calls me about a month later and says, "Well, how are you doing with the book?" And I'm like, "Oh, you're serious?" Because this guy's a major publisher. And I have no agent, no contract, whatever. He said, "Send me an outline and I'll send you a contract." Spent 3 days in December, right before Christmas of 2008, drafted an outline, and the outline ended up being 98% of the book. So I did not change much from that. I sent a questionnaire out in January of 2009. I got 95 responses. Most of them were very helpful. There was one who said, "Who the hell do you think you are to write a book? Nobody can write a book on Seth." So we're always having a voice. There's always someone, you know, who's contrary. And he's right. You know, why write a book on Seth? Just go to the Seth books. It's a no-brainer. However, we know that on the other hand, some people consider the Seth material too technical, too intellectual. It's too hard and to penetrate. So there is a good reason to do some of that. So I took a Socratic dialogue approach of questions and answers. There's over 70 different questions throughout the 16 chapters of the book. There's also 14 exercises in there. So what I've done is to capture the essential elements of what I consider a foundational Sethian practice, and it consists of 3 things, and Rick's talk covered all 3 of them, of course. First thing is, and in no particular order, first thing is belief work, critical, the introspection. Second one is the dream work, learning to become awake, aware in dreams, and remember dreams, and of course the journaling that goes with that. And the third is psi time, psychological time, the gateway drug to the other inner senses, the gateway inner sense that opens the door to everything. And when you think about the religious traditions, what is sitting in silence for 20 years about? It uses psychological time. It uses it differently, and there's different variations as we go through that. This is an illustration my friend Bob Terrio did for me back in the 90s when we did an interview with Rob up at the Hill House called The Seth Phenomenon. That's a wonderful record of Rob talking about his paintings, and it's the only one in existence, actually. It's a great record there. But I took an approach to this book of wanting to reveal the secrets. And, of course, there's no secret once you know it. As Rick said, it's simple. When you really get down to it, it can be boiled down to very simple pieces. Putting them into practice effectively over a period of time is the challenge we all face. So, 4 covers later, 2 major revisions of the book later, 2 years of work and research, 30 years of reading and studying and practicing. actually a video going on here, and I'm not sure why the video out is not picking that up. Okay, so be it. Move on. That book trailer, as we call it, is available on my website, paulhelfrich.com. It's also available on YouTube. Just check out Seth, The Ultimate Guide, and you'll find that. Now I'm going to talk briefly about the book and go through the 16 chapters as a broad overview. It starts with an introduction. Of course, we introduce the Seth material connected to the perennial philosophy to show that if this is to take its place in the emotional and conceptual life of the Western world, which is a Seth quote, we have to show it's connective tissue. It doesn't exist in isolation by itself. It's not an island. Is Seth starting a new religion? What do you think?
No.
No, of course not. It's antithetical. That's not his role. He's stirring the pot. He's a herald on the bridge in this transition from the modern era into a postmodern era. What is Seth? Seth called himself a bridge personality. Jane and her aspects called him a personogram, like a telegram, but it's got a personality. It shows up and talking. Can anyone else channel Seth? And this is a very interesting topic, because the answer is yes and no. It's paradoxical. Seth says there are no closed systems, right? So in theory, it's possible. However, he's very, very, very clear. It's in the early sessions, volume 9 or maybe volume 6, two statements where he says, unequivocally, I will not come through anyone else to maintain the integrity of the material. That's a political angle, but I think it's ultimately necessary. And he's on the record saying that. So when other channels come up claiming to channel Seth, and I've had dozens of people talk to me over the years saying that Seth is coming through on a Ouija board. And having studied Jane, I just give her Jane's answer, saying it's a part of yourself, the creative, it's your inner self, and call it anything but Seth. And that's my advice going forward. Other sources, Abraham, we're familiar with that, Bashar, other channels that are out there. Since Jane paved the way through these, through the 70s and 80s. And then the introduction is with Toward a New Worldview. And there's something I call worldview dynamics, which I took from the work of a Swiss sociologist, Jean Gebser, and just condensed into a simple threefold triad, traditional, modern, and postmodern worldview dynamics. And the essential thing is that the traditional worldview is basically the fundamentalist religious heart-centered feeling worldview. The modern is more intellectual, scientific, cerebral. And the postmodern is attempting to take the best of both of those and reintegrate them, because they've kind of split in the last 500 years. So there's linear and non-linear unfolding going on in the different stages of development that happen. And each subsequent stage is built upon the foundation that preceded it. Now, this is really important to remember as you're looking at developmental studies, as we call them today, but it's transcend yet include. So we're not just jettisoning or throwing the baby out with the bathwater, because when that happens, we get this kind of schizophrenic split. And I believe, and other scholars and thinkers have argued, that this is what's happened in the last 500 years, and sort of what we're seeking towards, and what I feel that the Seth phenomena as a grassroots movement bubbling up from the psyche, grassroots, is trying to restore that balance. And it makes sense to try and integrate science and spirit, and why I feel the need to do that so strongly. So as these worldviews unfold, it's like a forest of seedlings, saplings, and trees all coming up, happening together, overlapping. And the dynamics between them result in many of the issues, economic, political issues that we have today. So as they unfold, they create new challenges that can only be solved by a more sophisticated perspective, or else risk regression and arrest. And Einstein...
The significant problems we face can never be solved at the level of thinking that created them.
The significant problems we face can never be solved at the same level of thinking that created them. Something has to happen. Here's what Seth's comment on that is.
Consciousness, by its nature, continually expands. the nature of consciousness, as you understand it as a species will, in one way or another, lead you beyond your limited ideas of reality, for your experience will set challenges that cannot be solved within your current framework. Those problems set by one level of consciousness will automatically cause breakthroughs into other areas of conscious activity where solutions can be found.
So there's a lot of evidence out there that these worldview dynamics are important to understand, and we can bring them to bear to solve social problems and personal issues as we go forward. Now, the first part of the book is called Discover Your True Self. There's three parts of the book: Discover Your True Self, Discover Your Place in the World, how I relate to all of you, my place in the world, and the third part is Discover how we can all live in harmony. How do we all get the hell along without killing each other? So these three dimensions of being in the world really are inseparable and something that we deal with all the time. The first chapter, we dig into the multidimensional self. We introduce the inner senses, and we end with the families of consciousness to show what your innate intent is in life. It's a lot in the first chapter. The second chapter, you create your own reality. I boil it down into a fourfold structure. The physics of reality creation, CUs, EEs, those physics approach we talk about. The biology of reality creation. There's a lot of information on cellular activity, human cellular activity in relationships to framework one and two, the plants, animals. Physics, biology. The third one is psychology, the psychology of reality creation. And Ricky's talk was focusing on the psychology, which of course influences the biology and the physics. And the fourth one is the metaphysics. That's where the inner self lives. So these four types are all working together in every moment point as we in physical reality create our own reality. Love, gender, and sex. What do you mean I'm bisexual? That's a question that's about the fourth question in this chapter. Well, Carl Jung understood this, Freud understood it to some degree, that we have an anima and animus, a male and female archetype deep within us. And this gets into the gay and lesbian, bisexual, and all these sexual variation issues. And Seth is a very open-ended presentation of human sexuality and the spectrum of sexuality. And it validates every single expression. And I would just add, as long in its healthy form. When it gets pathological and goes to extremes, of course, nobody's really happy at that point. And in their process of reality creation, they're working their way back to a healthy equilibrium, regardless of what their sexual preference is. And there's a lot of beautiful material on emotions, devotion, and love in the Seth material and nature of personal reality as well. Fourth chapter gets into dreams and dreaming. True dreams from the gates of horror, dream art science, dream recall. There's an exercise, a practice in there, and how to help remember your dreams, because that's another suggestion of self-hypnosis you can give yourself as you go to sleep each night. What else we have in there? Therapeutic dreams, true dreams from the gates of horn, out-of-body experiences. There's a lot of wonderful information there. And again, this is all introductory. So it's all in one place. It's all highly ordered as we're going forward. And I couldn't go into great depth on anything. Chapter 5 closes out this first part, birth, death, and reincarnation. That we choose our parents, that reincarnation is a fact of life, though we don't fully understand it. Karma. My views have changed in the 30 years since I first read Seth. There is some momentum to our belief systems as we go forward. There's a debris field that we're all carrying behind us in time energetically. So if you want to call that karmic, I think that's okay. But the point is that karma is not predetermined for your next lifetime to be reborn as a tree or a spider as punishment for bad deeds as we're moving towards enlightenment. So there's a very subtle redefinition of karma in the Seth material that's quite beautiful. Anything else in there that I should mention? Nope. Take a break. Thank you. did forget to mention the high intellect. That's in part one. That's a really important modality going forward, part of the DreamArt scientific perspective. So the part two, discovering your place in the world. I started with Seth's creation myth from Dreams, Evolution, and Value Fulfillment. The first chapter is called Before the Beginning. So I've always used that as a name because it's a Zen koan. It's a paradox. How can there be a before the beginning? Is it the beginning of the beginning? What's before the beginning? And so that's the first chapter. And then I think chapter two is called In the Beginning, because there was some kind of explosive manifestation that started the process that we know today. What else is in there? The sleepwalkers, our dream ancestors, very important, connected to the families of consciousness. And the Garden of Eden, the awakening of the outer ego. In the Seth narrative, the Garden of Eden represents the awakening from animal form, from the dream world, from the subtle realm of the outer ego, awakening to its high in physical body, and the startling terror of knowing that now I have to die, now I have to feed myself, now I'm cold, now I'm hot. All these things happen now that I am in the physical body, where all this activity before the beginning was taking place in the dream time, which is an aboriginal creation myth term, but I use that in the book and I do point that out. But there was a dream time that went on, and it's quite beautiful. Chapter 7, Frameworks of Consciousness, focusing on frameworks 1 and 2. Here's frameworks 3 and 4. Not much material on there, but I have pointed out in the end notes where all of that material can be found. Chapter 8 is one of the most interesting and controversial parts of the book. It takes place right in the middle, the Christ drama. In Seth Speaks, chapter 21, The Meaning of Religion, he says that there will be a second coming, which is actually a third coming, because this entity came in the time of Atlantis, so there was that time and historical Christ. And this century, this third appearance of the Christ drama, this personality would not be well known, and its job would be to turn institutionalized religion on its head, to subvert it, to turn it upside down. And in a sense, this Christ material does just that. And it scared the shit out of Jane. And she felt a tremendous responsibility for unleashing that to the world. And it's on the record that there was a Christ book available, which I know we all would love to have seen what Seth's Christ book would have been about. But Jane had her feelings and chose not to bring that into our probable reality. The role of speakers is outlined here. And do we get into... No, that was chapter 7. So I just want to back up. In frameworks, we also deal with master events. These are massive psychological frameworks in framework 2 that are playing out and attempting to crystallize in terms of manifestation in framework 1 from a simultaneous perspective. So this master event, this Christ drama, was a master event. It still is. We're in the tail end of it, influencing us as a master event. And I also forgot to mention, very important, the alpha states. The alpha 1 through alpha 5 in Seth Speaks are detailed. It's also in Sue Watkins' conversations with Seth. This is Seth's pathway to accessing all the information of what's called the Akashic Record, whatever you want to call it, cosmic memory, the different layers that are outlined there. These alpha exercises are a tune-up, a warm-up, to consciously, with high intellect developed, begin accessing this information and bringing it to bear in our civilization. Tremendous potential. Chapter 9 deals with Lumania, the lost civilization in three groups. It talks mostly about the second Lumanian civilization. The Dream City, a beautiful exercise in class to go practice your dreaming, build a part of the Dream City. Seth said he was going to appear there as, I'm paraphrasing, as a bum, as a loving bum, kind of, you know, aqua lung like, sitting on the street just watching things in typical Zen fashion. And of course, some of the real other controversial material on UFOs that we have been visited, that we have been seeded by alien visitation. And sessions 604 and 605, I believe, are published in the personal sessions, the deleted material. They're not, because the early sessions go up to 509, and so 604, 605 are in the personal sessions. Check it out. It's worth the price of the book, those two sessions. Okay?
I'm
sorry?
None of that information appears in the sense? About the UFOs?
No, it's those two sessions, and they were deleted. It's out there stuff. The Ankh, the flood is talked about, the Egyptian Ankh as an alien technology that caused the great flood, the biblical flood, all kinds of stuff that always made Jane go, oh, Jesus, what's he saying now? I'm going to deal with that. I'm sorry?
The book, which
personal sessions book is that in? I would guess it's volume 1 or 2, because it's 604 and 605. Just remember 604 and 605, and you can find that out. You can check newworldview.com and search on it. Do a Google search on it. It's out there on the web.
Buy both.
And buy the books. Chapter 10 is our animal heritage. There's a lot of wonderful information on animals. And, of course, we emerge from an animal consciousness into the outer ego. You can't read the icon on the young man's chest, but it's a young soccer hooligan in the UK. Talk about beliefs and the question the gentleman had about being a child and children creating their own reality and being in this belief field. And hey, Dad's doing it, Uncle Bill's doing it, Aunt Mary's doing it, Mom's doing it. I'm doing it too! But the good news, seedling, sapling, tree, stages of development, as we move through that, people wake up to certain things. Chapter 11 is probably the most challenging one. The title is Sethics. It's a title that was coined by J.C. Mackin on the SethNet list around 2000. He asked the question, what is a Sethian ethics? What is Sethics? Nobody answered it adequately at the time, and it took me 7 years to come up with an answer, and it's there in Chapter 11. And it deals with the nature of absolute truth. The laws of the inner universe are presented here, because Seth says there is an ethical connotation within consciousness units. That the very basic element of all that is, if it fragments into its most minute part, has an ethical component inherent in it. Now, it's not hardwired in stone tablets, and it's dynamic, and it's relative, and it changes. Why do bad things happen to good people? Here's an exercise to try. Catch yourself saying, oh, that just happened to me. That happened to him. God, I hate when that happens. And if you replace that verbal programming with, why did I create that? Why did he create that? Why did we create that? Why am I creating this? This opens up Pandora's box to taking full responsibility for every thought, action, belief that we have. And it is a Pandora's box. It is not an easy path, but it is a glorious path in time with persistence and resilience. We're all innately resilient. No matter how low, how bad things happen, we have this resilient spark in us to rise up, reassemble. The inner self is always probing us to our greatest fulfillment. Chapter 13, from Mass Events. Practicing idealism. I dealt with Seth's views on Hitler, Germany, Three Mile Island accident, Jim Jones in Jonestown, and the ethical implications of these things. These are mass events. And I should also point out again that the book, The Individual and the Nature of Mass Events, which is a counterpart to The Nature of Personal Reality, is the only specific book of the 30 that deals with mass events. Now, there's mass events material peppered in Seth Speaks, Nature, Personality, Psyche, and other places where he goes into larger themes, but it's not developed. It's in one book. And that's because Seth's main goal was the individual, each one of us to start on our individual work. But after 34 years of that, you do get to a point where it's in our community now. How do we come together and act responsibly together, whatever that means, however we do that? That's an open rhetorical question I put out there. Okay. Chapter 14, The Birth of Aspects, and the New Worldview. This deals with Jane's Aspect Psychology, her three books, and our heroine dies. Chapter 14, the penultimate chapter. The final question is, why is Jane Roberts' death important? and actually turn it around and say, why is your own death important? That's really all you're dealing with. When you react to that question, or Uncle Bill's death, or Mom's death, or my spouse's death, in one layer from this reality creation perspective, we're always dealing with our own fear of death, our own path, and knowing that we have to do that. And then in the final chapter, the secret is revealed. And you're going to have to buy the book to find out what it is. But I will tell you that you already know it, and it's very simple when you get to it. It's all of these things working together, and I tried to crystallize it in as pithy a way as I could. And there is one diagram that I'd like to show. I've been using this for the last 5 or 6 years, and it's based on a diagram in Ken Wilber's A Theory of Everything, from published in 2000. And Ken based it on one of the great American religious scholars of the 20th century, Houston Smith's work, Forgotten Truth, Why Religion Matters, The World's Religions. And this shows what's important here, and there's a lot here. And it's the only diagram in the book. Oh, that's my pen, let's see. I have a laser point here. Oh, there it is. Okay, let's see. Key elements here. Levels of self. This deals with our interiors. So the outer ego, the entity, what Rob phrased as a dream cloud, Seth's primary pyramid gestalt, are all interior-looking things. These are counterpointed over here with levels of reality, or the outside. So levels of reality is the outside, levels of self is the inside, and the way they work together. Framework 1, exterior. Frameworks 2, 3, and 4, there's something beyond that. And then this level is really not a level, all that is. And if we go around the circle, Brahman, Svahavik, Kakaya, all of these terms, and then all of these interior terms, Buddha nature's down at the bottom, spirit, Vitra, are just words to try and describe the one that's inside of everything. So that outer circle, is actually, it'd be nice to have it go backwards and be the most innermost circle. That's why the yin-yang, Taoism, is just represented with no words on the chart, and it's in there, in that form. But ideally, when you get to chapter 15, if you work through the exercises and the book, this will make a lot of sense to you and help organize it.
I like that.
That picture I had in a draft of the book, Why Are Cats and Geese Important in the Seth Material? That is a question that's in there. And it's because they love their kitties, and I love my cats, and Rob and his geese, many stories about the change of seasons, and they make the feeling of seasons of the soul that we feel when the geese are flying. There's a wonderful epilogue to wrap things up. There's a thorough glossary of terms in there. I paraphrase the inner senses because they are the gateway to the high intellect and dream art science moving forward. A full up-to-date bibliography of Chain's books, and then some Seth-related resources like New Awareness Network, SMI, and those sorts of things as well. And of course, endings. Some uses for this book. People on the email list, or one of the constant questions they were asking is, how can I introduce this to my friends and family? I'm so passionate about this. I love this so much. They don't understand what I'm talking about. This book is something that you can give to your loved one, parent. It is at an adult reading level, and certainly conceptually it is an adult book. But I believe honors high school students could work through this as a textbook as well. For those of us who've been doing it for 10, 20, 30 years, a way to refresh, revisit, and explore the Seth material from a comprehensive perspective, one that connects the dots in a new way, and it can deepen your personal practice as well. And it's also something that can be used in local study groups as an introduction to the entirety of the Seth material. And then you can branch out using the entire library of books and video and audio as well. So people have often who want to run a study group are not quite sure how to do that, and when they're running it, what tools to use to facilitate that. Facilitating the group dynamics of a Seth group is a real art form and time. It takes time and practice. And the final thought here is that it's less than 50 years old, all of this material. It's just coming out. We continue to unpack it and put it into our own everyday lives. So it's so fresh and so new, and it's just ripe with potential for transformation. The book has been endorsed by the following people. And there are some very notable names on this list, which I was really pleased during the process, which was not the easiest process for me getting this book published. But to have John Klimo's endorsement, he's the reigning dean of academic training. At the very bottom, if you can't see it, is Arthur Hastings' name. He's the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology in the San Francisco area. Who else? Stanley Krippner. He did a study of Rantha that's published in the literature and was a very big supporter. And he has doctoral students who he's having get this book for their research and whatnot to have an overview of the Seth material so they can bring it to bear.
Are these all people who've read the Seth material?
To some degree, yes. Oh, yeah. And are familiar with it, yeah. And read the book. Have read the book and gave me feedback on it. So February 1st, mark this on your calendars, please, exclusively at Amazon. It will be available for the Kindle and iPod, Seth on iPhone. Why not, right? Eventually.
Pre-order ready?
I can't give you that information today, but we will be getting a newsletter out in the next week or two with an update. And there's things I just weren't ready for conference time. We've been pushing hard to get closure on that for pre-orders there. But you will come to newworldview.com to order the book, and when you order it, then it'll push you to Amazon. So please participate in the book launch. Help make it an Amazon bestseller, get it some legs, get some buzz going. Remember February 1st. Moving on now to New Worldview. Coming out of all this, we've restructured New Worldview, and this is our new mission statement. To artfully help you realize your unique purpose in life, the source of your greatest fulfillment. That's what we've boiled it all down to. And what that means is when you look at the Nine Families material, it's not well known in the Sethian community, and it's been expanded in other esoteric circles, that it shows that the creative forces in Framework 1, that Sumafi family is a teaching family, that Sumari family is an artistic pot-stirring family, the Borladim are the nurturers and providers of earth stock, the Vold are the reformers, the Gramata are the inventors or innovators, and so on. That you need these roles of intention to create, and a civilization will come out of these probability fields when they lock in somehow to nine, not ten, not eight, but nine different intentions. Yes, the holy hand grenade. Four is right out. So identifying your intent, your innate intent, is the first step, and then developing that and applying it. The happiest people that we come across at any stage of life are the people who are doing what they know they've been born to do. And they're totally in tune with that, and their life's path, for better or worse in different cases, leads them right along that. We're also taking a back-to-basics approach. Now, today, you know, I tend to give sophisticated talks. There's a lot of information. I plant a lot of seeds for you to sleep on and digest and bubble over in time. But we want to take a back-to-basics approach and simplify as much of this as we can. Because if we're going to teach this effectively to ourselves and another generation, we have to be able to distill it to its basic elements. I'm not claiming to have done that, even though the book's title is arrogantly called Seth, the Ultimate Guide. It is a double entendre. It's not just the ultimate guide on Seth, but it's Seth as your ultimate guide to your inner self, to the One. We've developed a two-year tiered curriculum that's a conveyor belt based on the Seth material, tailored to individual needs, that we're going to be rolling out next year. So we're going to start with 8-week online workshops that they build over the course of the entire year. So there will be prerequisites. So it's not just you take one and you get your weekend of instruction and whatnot and then go away. After 3 days, you're back to your normal thing. You've forgotten everything. This is structured to go over a full year, a full second year, and enhance your process, your practices, and develop the map and the practices as we do. So we have 3 workshops that we're rolling out. First one is called, appropriately, Foundations for Spiritual Life. This is our foundations course, and it's based on the books. It's the entire Seth material as your foundation. Because remember, from this book, you can branch out to 46 different books of Jane Roberts. And that's just Jane's stuff. Just. Discover Your Purpose and Intent, then, is the second level of this. Getting deeply in touch with that, beginning to work with that and develop that if you're out of touch with that. And then, building off of that is developing your spiritual superpowers, which is actually the high intellect, dream art, science, things like that, channeling, your channeling ability, your empathic ability, your healing ability, things that you naturally do. Oops. We have a new website that we hope to have unveiled today, but it's not quite ready. So it will be coming hopefully in the next week or two, along with a newsletter update. And we've totally reconstructed the New Worldview website. The one that's out there now is going to be retired. It's had its role, its day is done, and we're moving on to a new stage. Chris Johnson from the UK. How many of you know Christopher Johnson? Okay, son of Harry, has joined our team, and we're really happy to have him here. And unfortunately, the video feed is not working right now, but I'm going to play the video that he sent. You're going to have to use your imagination. I think it may work. I'm going to paint a picture for you to listen to the audio that'll come through. In it, Christopher is sitting in his solarium, and he has 4 copies of Seth, the Ultimate Guide, arrogantly positioned around him in a non-apologetic way. He sits down and he basically tells us an update from his perspective in the UK. So let's see if that... Christopher. So I would like to introduce my partner in time to finish up the final part about the new world view. So without further ado, please welcome Joanne Helfrich.
If I put this down here, can you hear me? Okay. And I just wanted to mention it while I'm thinking of it, that if you would like to be... No, that's okay. If you would like to be reminded of the book's availability and any other New Worldview updates, to put your email address on that card, and we'll be happy to add you to the distribution. So as you can see, Chris is very funny, and that is a wonderful part of our whole adventure, because we are having a lot of fun with this, and we fully expect for our classes to be that also. But one of the things that Chris, that you may not know about Chris, aside from the fact that he's funny, is that he has a lot of other extraordinary gifts. One of the gifts is that he is a student of psychology. He's studied it a great deal, and he has the ability to do things like other focus encounters, past life regressions. He actually studied with Dr. Brian Weiss, who's the expert. I don't know if you've ever read Many Lives, Many Masters, but he has that, and he also has things like emotional freedom techniques in his bag of tricks. So when we talk about feelings and emotions, like Ricky was talking about earlier, you know, we have to be prepared for anything that comes out. I remember New Worldview did our conference a few years ago. We had a track called Unleash Your Multidimensional Self, and someone did. Okay? Yeah, imagine that, you know. So we really have to be prepared for this. There is a shift in consciousness happening now that we're involved in, and people are having trouble sometimes processing the things that happen to them because they don't necessarily have a framework to understand those things. So in addition to the foundation that Paul is doing with regard to the Seth material, there's also the emotional aspect that Chris is taking care of, and me also, because my course is going to be the Spiritual Superpowers course, and I'm very excited about it because I have direct experience in unleashing those multidimensional selves also. In spite of the fact that I've been promoting the Seth material and other channelers for years and years and years, it still totally surprised me that I began to perform an energy exchange with a very wide personality essence named Rose 3.5 years ago. So I have the experience, and as have my friends in helping me through it, Paul and Chris especially, in helping me to get on track and work through that process in a really sane way. So that has been a really extraordinary experience, as you can imagine. And the thing that really helped me to do it was my interest in the intent and purpose information that Seth began in The Unknown Reality, Volume 2. And a lot of people never make it to that book. I didn't. But I was exposed to the families of consciousness, and I had a very, very deep interest in helping people connect with what theirs is. Because to me, knowing what your intent is in life and being able to help yourself discern what you would like to do with your life based on those basic guidelines is really important. And if you don't like the idea of there being 9 families of consciousness, just imagine it's a rainbow with infinite possibilities. If you really think that someone's trying to put you in a box and you really are sort of repelled by that idea, then you're probably Sumari.
Seth said that.
And he also has a fondness for Ilda, which I belong to, and so enough said. So what we really want to do is, as Paul said, get back to basics, help people through these classes to be whoever we are. And I would just quick show of hands, who here is a channeler? who believes they can channel? Well, according to my sources, according to Rose, we're all capable of channeling, okay? It's a very broad definition that she uses to define it, which is taking inner information and bringing it out in accurate ways. So if you can think about what extraordinary powers lie within you and begin to loosen up to the idea that when you're doing things that are fun, when you're composing music, when you're doing artwork, you might be a speaker, you might be any number of things, and everything is unique to you, okay? There's never going to be another Seth channel through Jane Roberts because that was entirely unique, just like you are, just like I am. So what we do is to try to connect you with your method of channeling, all right? And so that's what we're doing, and we look forward to seeing you. We hope we get a chance to see you online and in our classes. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Joanne. And finally, two things to close with. One, there should be a little card. Joe, did you pass those out?
Yes.
If you would please fill out your comments, feedback from my talk today. I would love to get your feedback. If you're not on our mailing list, please put your email address on there and we will add it to our mailing list. You'll get our newsletter with updates about the book and programs as we go forward. And the last thought is, if you take one thing away from today, the way that you can help us is February 1st, come to New Worldview and buy this book, and let's help it get some legs and be a bestseller. Thank you very much.